Go figure, with our special guest, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, up next. Her latest work, Mysteries of the Afterlife. You know, she wrote a book with me called Talking to the Dead, but Mysteries of the Afterlife is amazing. We'll be back with Rosemary Ellen Guiley in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, a leading paranormal researcher, investigator, numerous authors, 60-plus books now, has done some groundbreaking research on the Zen, the shadow people, negative hauntings, other entity contacts. Her latest work is called Mysteries of the Afterlife. Rosemary, welcome back.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on the show again, George. Thank you so much.
And I'm looking forward to seeing you this weekend at the Afterlife Symposium in Scottsdale. That is really going to be something.
I'm so excited to participate in it this year. I've done this in earlier incarnations several years ago, this symposium, and now it's gotten to be the biggest in the field. Joe and I just arrived in Scottsdale today, getting geared up. I'm doing Black Mirror workshops, a lecture on Dream Visits from the Dead. I'll be on your panel.
Yep.
And the banquets. It's going to be a great event.
How's the weather?
Beautiful, hot, over 100, but we got out of the East Coast. I don't think Connecticut's going to be too much affected by Florence, but
no.
A lot of the air flights are being affected, and we got out, I think, just in time today.
Everything's screwed up. Let's hope that this thing diminishes and diminishes. How'd you like that song? I love playing that whenever you're on.
I know. I love it, too. It's the only song I know of with my name in it.
I know it. It is, but it's one of those classics. And they played that song. Guess what movie that was in?
Oh, gosh, you've got me there.
Now I'm going to forget the title of it, but it was something Hal. What was his name? It was with the Joe Black?
Oh, I think I know which one you mean, but the title of it.
Shallow Hal. Shallow Hal was the name of the movie, I think.
I did not know that song was in the movie.
Yep, because her name is Rosemary. In the movie, the girl, and he looked at her with different eyes. You know, Tony Robbins zapped him in the elevator, and he saw things differently. It's a great movie, but that's
Shallow
Hell.
That
that's it. Anyways, tell me about the latest work, Mysteries of the Afterlife.
It is the second of there's two volumes, and the sister volume is called Contact with the Dead, and that came out earlier this summer. I'm executive editor of Fate Now. I've had a long
association. Good for you.
Yes, I've been doing that now for a couple of years. I've been with Fate since the early 90s, and I've had different jobs with Fate as a columnist and contributor, now executive editor. And I had been in discussions with the owner of Fate, Phyllis Galdi, for some time about getting the archives back out into publication, because over the course of its history since 1948, leading researchers, experts, experiencers have contributed on a wide range of topics to Fate. And in every single issue, and there are over 700 issues published now, there have been articles and anecdotes devoted to survival. This has been a very important topic for Fate. Most people associate Fate with ghosts, hauntings, UFOs, cryptids, but survival and my proof of heaven, my proof of survival, and the research related to that, always very important to Fate. And so I have been issuing now a series of books that are bringing the best of Fate to light again. This is information that is always relevant. Inspiring stories, leading researchers weighing in on things. I've contributed to the volumes myself with some of my own research. And afterlife studies being very important to me, starting with our book, Talking to the Dead. I've continued that now with Contact with the Dead and Mysteries of the Afterlife. And Mysteries of the Afterlife looks at the near-death experience, the process of dying, deathbed visions, is there a heaven and hell? What can we say about whether or not there is survival after death and what we are likely to encounter? And Contact with the Dead goes into how we have communion and reunion with the dead, how we are visited, the types of experiences we have, like phone calls, dream visits, visionary experiences, our communication through mediumship, through modern technology like electronic voice phenomena, and also how we also have reunions and communion with our pets who have gone on to the other side.
Well, I got to tell you, nobody does it better than you, Rosemary. So this is exciting, both for what you're doing for Fate and also your works and 60 plus books already. Isn't that amazing?
Well, you know, I've kind of slowed down a little bit, but only because I'm a publisher now, and so I'm working on other people's books as well as my own. And Visionary Living Publishing now has 32 titles issued in the paranormal, UFOs, cryptids, metaphysics, and spirituality, and I'm also launching fiction. I've got a paranormal romance from an author coming out next month.
Well, good for you. Good for you. If we can help you in any way, you let us know that.
Well, thank you.
So let's talk about the other side. What do you think really happens when people have near-death experiences? Because it's one of two things. Either the experience is truly metaphysical and supernatural, or the brain is doing something in that kind of mode. What do you think's going on?
My personal opinion is that it's a combination of both, and since near-death experiences came into the public arena in the 70s and 80s, there has been a lot of attention devoted to the understanding of this kind of phenomenon, and how real is it, or how subjective is it? Certainly, we have to have a physical mechanism for having the experience in the first place. And so scientists have looked at what can we say about the processes that go on in the brain that could explain the types of things that people experience, the lights, sensation of floating, being out of the body, seeing apparitions of the dead, having visions and vistas of otherworldly places. Is it just the brain going through a chemical process when we come close to the state of mind?
Yeah, or maybe lack of oxygen or something.
Lack of oxygen, endorphins being released in the brain. Is this just nature's way of making death palatable? And so certainly we have to have the physical mechanism in place to have the experience. But on the other hand, I believe that these experiences are indeed excellent evidence for survival after death, because we have had these kinds of experiences throughout history. They've been documented, and there are many characteristics of common ground that are shared by these experiences, regardless of the period of history and the culture. Some of them do have culture-specific characteristics to them, like certain religious figures that show up. But the overall nature of these experiences is shared by all of humanity. Now, we don't really know how many people in the general population have these experiences, because they have to be reported for us to know about it. But the estimates are that in the United States alone, perhaps a couple hundred thousand people a year are reporting NDEs or similar kinds of experiences involving an out-of-body experience or an OBE. There's a mystical nature to these experiences that brings about profound changes in people. People return from these experiences often significantly different. They have different outlooks, different values. They become convinced of survival. They may even feel different physically, as though they've been rewired. And these also are commonly shared characteristics. So perhaps 10 to 15% of the world's population has had these kinds of experiences, or reported them at least, and even children have them.
Oh, they do. Now, what does science say about them to this point?
Well, some scientists, of course, take a very hard look at this in terms of the physical characteristics, that these are things that can be explained physically, because If you stimulate certain areas of the brain, you can induce similar phenomena. And so this may not be an actual experience of the other side, but just something that happens when the brain undergoes certain changes. And other scientists have examined the evidence and weighed the anecdotal evidence, the subjective side of it, to take a broader view that we're looking at something that has to do with consciousness and not just chemicals in the brain. And of course, consciousness is non-local. We associate it with the brain because it involves our thoughts and emotions and memories, but it really exists as something separate. Because when people have these experiences, they feel a separation from the physical body that then becomes the personality or the I guess, concept of who a soul is, who am I as a personality, as a soul, continues to exist separated from the body. So what exactly is involved in this process concerning consciousness? And that's something we don't have a great deal of understanding concerning the nature of consciousness, how it operates, what it is able to access. I believe in an afterlife. I believe in alternate realities, interdimensionality, a multiverse, and that our experiences today, and when we share them and talk about them, including the NDE and other kinds of exceptional, extraordinary experiences, we are encouraging the pool of humanity to have these experiences as well. And the more we collectively have these experiences, the more we are going to expand our perceptions beyond 3D reality. I think the future for humanity is going to be very different in terms of how we perceive worlds around us and realities around us than it is today.
When you talk about children having these NDEs, are they similar to adults or are they different?
Sometimes they're quite similar. Children are likely to see, of course, apparitions of deceased family members. And astonishingly, there are cases on record where children see people on the other side that they did not even know had died. Sometimes they meet siblings who had died before them that they didn't know existed. For example, if the mother had miscarried or if a child had died early in infancy, and they didn't know that that sibling had existed, but they see them on the other side and talk about them. Sometimes they even see future siblings that haven't even been born yet. Children, depending upon the age of a child, children can come back with a lot of confused feelings about what's real anymore, that they have a wonderful experience, perhaps, in a near-death experience, and then they have a hard time reintegrating themselves back in what we would call ordinary reality. And they may go through periods of feeling isolated, not being able to relate to others very well. Sometimes they show an evidence of enhanced learning abilities, even IQ abilities, more creative problem-solving abilities. Some of these things affect adults as well. For example, relationships can undergo profound changes after a near-death experience because people feel that they're rewired, and that rewired feeling can often make it difficult to relate to other people and to the workaday world again.
There was a movie that John Travolta was in called Phenomenon where he got zapped by a bright light and discovered supernatural powers that he had. When somebody has a near-death experience and they witness this light, and then they come back, Rosemary, haven't they changed? Their lifestyle changed? They're better people? They're nicer people?
Well, sometimes that is the case. People report that they've lost a lot of interest in material pursuits. They're more interested in altruistic sorts of things. They feel more empathic, more sympathetic toward other people, more humanitarian in outlook. And there have been cases, however, where people have come back and they have had a more egotistical reaction to it, where they feel that they've been kind of anointed or appointed to be a special messenger of sorts. And it is their duty and their job now to convince other people of you know, their reorientation, so to speak. And especially if a near-death experience has had a very religious effect on someone. Sometimes a near-death experience validates a person's religious beliefs, and sometimes it shakes up religious beliefs because it's contradictory to what people have been taught to believe about the afterlife.
Do some people have the ability to glance into the future when they come back?
There have been many documented cases of people having future visions during a near-death experience, and sometimes this happens during out-of-body experiences as well. These visions may be very personal in nature. For example, they may see themselves in the future, like with the spouse they're married to now, or with someone they haven't married yet, with children they haven't had, and they can see glimpses of their future lives very accurately. Other people have had broader visions of the future, where they see things happening to large numbers of the population or humanity in general. Some of them are apocalyptic in nature, the kind of message that human beings had better get their act together, or horrible things are going to start happening. There are going to be cataclysms and a cleansing of the earth. These are common themes that we find in a lot of religious visions as well.
Where does reincarnation, Rosemary, fit into this? Because if you have this near-death experience, do they also touch basically the steps of reincarnation?
Some of them do. And in fact, one of the earliest documented accounts of reincarnation from what may have been an NDE was recorded by Plato in his work Republic, where he talked about a soldier who seemed to be dead and then came back to life, and his name was and he talked about what he had seen on the other side, including the process by which souls selected their next lifetimes for reincarnation. And sometimes people get glimpses of past lives in a near-death experience. They have, not everyone has a life review, but some people have a life review. And sometimes that involves a sense of who they have been in the past as well. Visionary experiences, other kinds of visionary experiences that are very much like NDEs can also involve glimpses of reincarnation. Personally, I believe in reincarnation, and I have throughout most of my life since I was a teenager. And I believe that in the afterlife, we go through an assessment of our life. We are held accountable for our actions. We have opportunities to redeem things that weren't so good and to improve upon what was good, and that these sorts of things shape our future incarnations.
All right, we're going to come back in just a moment and continue chatting with Rosemary Ellen Guiley about her latest work, Mysteries of the Afterlife. What about heaven? What about hell? And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Rosemary Ellen Guiley with us. We'll take calls with Rosemary, your stories and questions next hour. VisionaryLiving.com is her website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and her book is called Mysteries of the Afterlife. When people have these NDEs, near-death experiences, Rosemary, do they sometimes witness heaven and hell?
Well, people will usually experience one or the other, and the majority of reported experiences are either just neutral or benign or very, very pleasant and even rapturous. Where people go up to the edge of the afterlife, they get a glimpse of it. It's usually something that fills them with peace, joy, wonder. They may see dead people that they know. They may come into contact with spiritual beings like angels or other higher beings of unknown origin who are like escorts or guides, and have a sense of great bliss. They may even have a partial life review or know that something like that will take place in the afterlife. And sometimes people are told that they must go back, that they haven't finished their life on Earth. They may want to stay very much because it is so wonderful compared to what they had experienced on Earth. They may be given a choice, and I've got examples of both of those kinds of NDEs in Mysteries of the Afterlife, where people were able to decide whether or not they would permanently die and enter the afterlife or come back. And for those who make the choice to come back, it's usually because they feel that they have responsibilities that they want to carry on, especially with family and children, or they haven't accomplished all of the things they knew that they were supposed to do in life. For people who have unpleasant experiences...
And that happens.
It does happen. And sometimes it's just feeling like in a very cold void, just absent of everything, feeling lost in it or trapped in it. Some people have literally the experiences that are religious in nature, that they encounter demonic dark entities who threaten to harm them or torture them. They have visions of literally the lake of fire. Things that are described in religious concepts of hell. And I do believe that different states of the afterlife exist, and in fact communications from the dead through other ways, through visitations, dreams, and mediumship, and those would be in the other volume, Contact with the Dead. The dead say that there are different levels of the afterlife, and if you have done things, if you have done bad things, then you are held accountable and you go to a very unpleasant place in the afterlife, but you have the chance to get out of that by redeeming yourself. It's not permanent. Some of the experts who've examined the underlying factors to NDEs have discovered that sometimes people are dealing with a lot of guilt. They've been taught that the afterlife is likely to be a place of harsh judgment. God is going to hold you accountable. They feel they don't measure up. And so there's an underlying fear that they will encounter something very bad on the other side. For some people, they haven't had any particular belief about the afterlife, but the experience in and of itself is scary to them, because if they haven't believed in an afterlife, they're having an experience that jolts them and shakes them up in a very profound way, so that it becomes fearful.
When people have these NDEs, they sometimes see an entity that tells them, go back. You're not ready. It's not your time. How often does that happen?
I can't say in a percentage of reported cases, and I'm not even sure that's been calculated. But obviously, people who have a near-death experience, they come back. That's what makes the near-death experience.
That's
so
right.
There's something that propels them back. They're either pulled back or told they have to go back. The figure who does this is sometimes it's a figure of a deceased person they know, and sometimes it's another being, like an angel or a higher being. They're even, in no matter how much they want to stay on the other side, and there are cases like that where people are so filled with joy at what they are experiencing, they don't want to come back, and they are literally even pushed back by beings who say, well, it's not your time yet. And sometimes it's a familiar figure, like a deceased relative, who says, you know, I'm sorry, but you can't stay. You have to go back because it's not your time yet. So it raises a lot of interesting questions, George, about how we are meant to go and when we're meant to go. Is our time of transition predestined? Do we have flexibility in the matter? How much choice do we have? There's one experience in Mysteries of the Afterlife whereby the individual knew that there would come a time when there would be no choice, that the transition would have to be made. And of course, we all do that. Some of us go early in life, some of us go much later in life, and how much of that really is predestined? I think these are interesting questions that need further study, and I'm not sure we can come up with concrete answers, but maybe an understanding of what the transition from life to the afterlife is all about.
There have been many cases lately of people who have taken their own lives. I mean, Anthony Bourdain, the chef, yeah, he's dead. And Robin Williams, he killed himself. When people do that, that's obviously not a near-death experience, but what happens to them?
Well, if they are able to communicate, and sometimes they do through dream visitations, and sometimes they do through mediumship, the stories that they have to tell run a considerable gamut. Most of them are regretful that they have caused pain to the living, because it is an incredibly painful thing for surviving friends and family to go through. And they regret that more than anything. Some of them do not regret taking their own lives, even though they know that they're going to have special compensation for that. That the issues that they, if they were trying to escape certain issues or conditions in life, they're going to have to deal with them again in some way. And sometimes people are regretful that they say, you know, after I got here, I knew that this wasn't what I should have done. And so I regret that I caused so much pain and suffering. However, they do emphasize that they are being helped on the other side. Now, there are certain religious views that people who commit suicide are condemned to a limbo or to a hell-like state. And this is contradicted by many of the accounts of communication, that the souls say that they are being aided by deceased loved ones and by spiritual beings to heal and to recover from that process. My feeling is that it kind of sets us back a bit, perhaps, in our soul track, because we may have to face face issues that we could have resolved while we were incarnated. And there may be some of that, as well as perhaps extended time in the afterlife, going through a rehabilitation healing process in order to be able to reincarnate again. So some interesting communications from those who have taken their own lives. Now, in other cultures, and especially in earlier times, suicide has been socially accepted as a way to exit life, especially if circumstances are very much against you or if you've brought shame on your family. Many political situations.
If you're dying of some disease or something.
Dying, yes, and people who have been diagnosed with, for example, terminal illness have opted for that in countries where they can do that, and instead of a prolonged dying that may involve a lot of painful suffering. There are a lot of moral and ethical questions I think we need to examine about these kinds of situations, and that souls should and people should not automatically be condemned for doing that. Not that we would want to encourage people to just arbitrarily take their own lives if they felt like earthly life was getting to be too difficult, but there might be mitigating circumstances where it would be acceptable.
It's just remarkable. And in these NDEs primarily, when people go and come back, do they sometimes feel as if their life is better or worse?
It's really a combination of things that on one hand, they feel regenerated in a very profound way. It's almost like being spiritually born again in a certain way because their outlook is so profoundly changed. But sometimes they come back and then have a hard time reintegrating themselves back into their family lives, their jobs, because some of those things don't seem to be as important anymore. People who have been, for example, in very ambitious, materialistic kinds of lifestyles may come back and feel that they have to be a lot different now. They're not interested in those things. They have more humanitarian outlooks where they want to help other people. They're sensitive to the suffering of other people. They want to take up causes to help better humanity, and they're not so much interested in having material things anymore. So depending upon a person's relationships, those relationships can go through a lot of strain. And it's not uncommon for spouses and family members to say, I don't even know this person anymore. I can't relate to them anymore because they're different. And so there are relationships that do end, divorces, separations. And some of those changes then become very painful.
Do the people who have had NDEs miss it? Do they wish they could go back?
Some of them do, yes, because what they have encountered is so profoundly different and seems to be so much more magnificent than earthly life. People describe an energy, a vista, colors, sounds, this feeling of love and being part of something cosmic and grand that they don't feel in the more earthly life. And so they long to have that again. And this may be the case with some children as well, because what they experienced was so much happier or better than what they often find back at home. And a lot of it has to do with, of course, somebody's existing life and their relationships and some of the stresses and things that we all go through. The afterlife seems to be a more perfected state than what we're often slogging through here. And this can set up a lot of psychological turmoil in people that they then have to deal with.
We know that the dead visit the living in dream states. That happens quite often. What's the catalyst for that?
It's a desire on the part of both the dead and the living to have a connection for final messages, for reassurances. And I liken the process to electricity, that it's an energy that finds the appropriate path and sometimes the path of least resistance, because not everybody has a dream visitation. And I've done a lot of study of dream visits from the dead. I did a book called Dream Messages from the Afterlife, Visits from the Dead, that came out several years ago, where I looked at the different types of dream visitations and the circumstances under which they have them. People who are grieving really want to know that their loved ones are all right, and it's not uncommon to long for another reunion. If only I could see that person again. If only I could talk to them. I want to know that they're all right. And sometimes these people will have visits during the dream state. This is one of the most common ways that the dead are able to come to us, because while we're dreaming, we are outside of the bounds of 3D ordinary reality. And I think that it is easier for these bridges to form where the dead and the living can have a brief reunion. These visits are usually short. They're to the point. The dead will often say, I don't have much time, so here's what I want to say. Don't worry about me. I'm fine. I'm always with you.
Mm-hmm.
I will always love you. Please do not grieve for me. The dead will often say that our profound grief actually can be felt on the other side as a very heavy weight. And yet, we can't conceive of not grieving someone we've loved who has passed on.
Rosemary, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and take phone calls and stories. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, our special guest tonight. Her website, visionaryliving.com. Her latest book, Mysteries of the Afterlife, a compilation by her with some incredible stories. We will be back in a moment with your calls on Coast to Coast AM.